So, as I said at the beginning of this morning, there are rightly seasons of emphasis. So, in the early days of our movements plural, we were contending for plural eldership rather than one pastor. We were contending for genuine spiritual authority. We were contending that that is instead of democracy. And hence, a strong emphasis on eldership in a local church. Okay? Now, along with that, we felt in those days that eldership is male. Why do I think that? Well, firstly, someone asked a question and wrote the question, am I just arguing for silence that there's no reference to female elders? I don't think I'm just arguing for silence, although it's true there aren't any references to female elders. What I believe is that, firstly, the qualifications are husband of one wife without, as there are for deacons, a reference to the women also. Okay? I don't think that can be wives, because if so, why not reference the wives of elders?
Right.
So, because you would think that was almost as important as wives of deacons. So I think it is the women also who are deacons. And whereas that doesn't come in relation to eldership. Secondly, I would argue that the verse we read, the contentious verse we read about 1 Timothy chapter 2 about teaching and exercising authority must mean something, and I think it must mean something more than simply culture in Ephesus.
Yeah.
Okay? If it was just culture in Ephesus, you might say, okay, we don't have those sort of problems of a female goddess ruling over the city anymore, so it's only applying to that. I don't believe that. I believe that, as with the other scriptures, there is an underlying principle that is being worked out contextually. And the underlying principle, I believe, is those who both exercise authority and teach is something that I do not permit a woman to do. Do you see what I mean? That's what I think it means. I don't think it can mean, as I hope I've laboured enough this morning, they can't ever teach, because that would be inconsistent with elsewhere in Scripture. So that's my argument, basically. So, and then my third argument would be that we still think in terms of position, institution, and so on, or even business. And if it's an institution or a business, I don't have any problem with women chief executives. Do you know what I mean? It's a business. But it's not. It's a family. And the whole emphasis in the New Testament, and in Timothy, later in this epistle, treat older men as, don't speak to an older man, rebuke an older man harshly, but treat him as a father, older women as mothers, younger men as brothers, younger women as sisters, whilst keeping absolute purity. Okay. So it's clear he's talking, the church is a family, and consistently the New Testament uses family language to describe the church.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay? And how apostolic ministry should function as well. And so, because we've lost that, both through the institutionalism of the church and the modern trend towards the commercialization of the church, we've lost the family atmosphere of the church, even though we would use the term family. Okay? But then loads of companies do, don't they? You go and buy something and they, oh, thank you for participating in the whatever company it is, family. No, I'm not. I'm buying something from you. Okay? And so, but the church is that. And it's always been that way. So So when God promised to change the world through the seed of Abraham, he said, Abraham, through your family, every family on earth is going to be blessed. It's the whole ethos of New Testament life is the church as a family. So we have to think of it in family language. Therefore, fathers and mothers within the church are important, but they're not the same. Anymore as they're equal, but they're not the same. Okay? And therefore, elders should function like fathers in the church. As I said earlier, therefore, who want to release all of those within their care to serve. They're there to provide the tram lines, if you like, of doctrine, which must be strayed from. And they are there to bring security and safety to the church so that in the church all the gifts can function fully. I know one or two of the women that preach in our church have said to me, I like it when you're there because you look encouraging at what I'm doing and you know. And that's because I'm an elder, not because I'm doing anything. Yeah. But I rarely do anything in our home church because it's my home church. I'm doing things when I travel around the world. Occasionally I preach a couple of times a year, but generally speaking, I'm just there. Well, that's a bit of waste. No, it's not. Because I'm there as a father and it helps those younger people, men and women who are teaching, that I'm there encouraging them. So I'm still acting as an elder. But that is not because I'm doing everything, it's because I'm enabling them to do so with security. So this family argument, I think, I don't mean family argument, that's not the wrong word for it. The argument on the basis of the church and the family is important. You may have a family argument as well, that wasn't the point I was trying to make. Okay. So for those three reasons, I believe that eldership is, it's not just male, it's certain men who God has called to be fathers in the church. However, our emphasis on eldership in the early days of our restoration movements, because we wanted to restore that, rightly, it developed what I call an executive eldership, where most things were initiated by the elders, most decisions were made by the elders, and there wasn't the same release of ministry, and we tended to forget that the purpose of leadership is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And so, in looking at this issue of women's ministry, it's caused us also to look at that. As I said, authority is to serve and release, and elders take servant leadership and accountable responsibility, and are fathers that enable the church to function with security. So what is, biblically, the responsibility and authority of elders? To guard the flock and protect the flock, the church, from false teachers. Okay. That is our responsibility for an elder. Doesn't mean we have to do all the teaching, but we are able to put things right if wrong stuff comes in. To teach and preach the word, yes, so I'd expect elders to preach from time to time. Not do all the preaching, but they are responsible to preach, to direct the affairs of the church. But I see that direction as a enabling direction, not a hands-on detailed direction. To exhort and admonish the saints in sound doctrine, to visit the sick and pray. Okay. Andrew Wilson concludes in one of his writings on the subject, and Andrew and I have talked about this a lot. At root, the New Testament language about elders, shepherds, overseers, leaders and teachers is bound up with serving the church by protecting and guarding her from harm. Elders biblically are guardians. This role can be helpfully summarized in terms of three core priorities of eldership: providing direction, guarding doctrine, and ensuring discipline.
Okay.
So, however, that doesn't mean that they are the only people that do those things. They are responsible and accountable to God for it. But they're not the only ones. And the Bible has a wonderful balance on this. Even when it comes to discipline, which is sometimes, is eldership responsibility. But then it says, tell it to the church and let them listen to the church. Wow. We don't do that very often either, do we? That's what it says. Because there is a power and a... Remember, New Testament is just the New Testament culture. That's the wrong way of putting it. The culture around in which New Testament was written was a shame-based culture, not a guilt-based culture. Therefore, shame in a right sense was a powerful motivator. So all these people in the church are appealing me to give up my sin. That's how it was. So tell it to the church. If they won't listen to the church, then. Okay? So elders responsible for what's taught. They're not, they don't, doesn't mean nobody else. Because we're trying to equip teachers all the time. And we do that in lots of ways. We want to develop people. We want to develop a church for the future as well. Often during the summertime, so it's not too much of a pressure on them, we have lots of young teachers. People in their 20s. All that. And we say, come on, you. And they do brilliantly, men and women. Yeah, I was astounded. You know, I just sat there like a father, being proud of the young people doing it. Yeah. Guess what you feel like as a father if your son or daughter do well, don't you?
Yeah.
Great. Don't you?
Yes.
So, because I wasn't travelling much during the summer, I was largely there. It was just great. To hear these young men and women teaching. Well, shouldn't be the elders teaching us on the morning? No, we're equipping the saints. Otherwise, you know, church will grow old with us. We're going to equip them. In our movement, most of us were young when we started. I know you might look around this today and be quite shocked by that thought, but actually, we were. Many of us were leading churches in our 20s. Because it was a whole new move of God. Well, you understand, we wanted to equip. So it doesn't mean that elders are the only people that do these things, or that other leadership functions aren't required in healthy churches, such as deacons, apostolic ministry coming in, prophets, evangelists, pastors, administrative leaders. All these healthy churches need them. But we as elders provide direction in broad terms, not every detail. We guard doctrine and we ensure discipline. I said ensure discipline, not doing all the discipline. So elders are primarily responsible for ensuring that these things happen in a healthy way, rather than being the only people to do these things. The principle of delegating leadership responsibility is clear in the Old Testament, Exodus 18. You know, Moses nearly wore himself out because he didn't delegate responsibility. It was established very early in the New Testament, Acts 6, I've already referred to. We can't do all this, get some other people to do it. We've already seen that whilst in the New Testament church, the responsibility for the teaching of the word rested with the elders, others, both men and women, shared in this ministry, teaching, instructing, and exhorting the church. Similarly, the responsibility to direct the affairs of the church rested with the elders, the responsibility, but there's no suggestion that gifts of leadership and administration were only given to the elders. You understand the difference between being responsible for something and doing it all?
Yeah.
One or two agree with me. Most look shocked. Okay. Responsibility for the doctrinal safeguarding of the church rested with the elders, but others were involved in theological deliberation and instruction. Deacons were also charged to keep hold of the deep truths of the faith with a clear conscience. And women could be deacons. And that's one of the things that they're told to do. A responsibility to pray for the sick is given to the elders. But I don't think any of us would think only elders could pray for the sick. Because gifts of healing are widely distributed in the body. But we're still responsible for doing it for it. And there are times when it's right, call the elders in to anoint with oil. So, how does that work? What I think, practically, what I think we're going to do, and each local church has to work this out for themselves, how? There's no blueprint. We haven't got a blueprint of exactly how it all worked in the New Testament. Therefore, we can't impose a blueprint today. Okay, so how does it all work? Well, I would say there are different models that churches in our wider family, I don't know about how you're doing it, but that are working it out. So there are different models, as I say. Some of us have got round to appointing them properly as deacons, some are still using other leadership terms because we've got to, you know, explain it all. That's okay, it takes time. Don't worry. But some would have what we might call a senior leadership team of men and women, where the elders who are responsible, particularly within an eldership team, for implementation, work it out with those. So, for example, in our home church, I'll just say how we work it. We have elders who are on the staff of the church. We have, there's only two of you now, isn't there, on the staff of the church? Yeah, you and Martin. All the rest of our staff are not elders. And we have four of us who are bivocational, or in my case, retired, not doing anything much. Which is not true. But I am retired. But because my ministry is all outside the church, I'm like a elder with a full-time secular job. And that's how I've functioned for many years. And so the senior leadership team is, you are two staff elders who've got the, because they're doing all the working out of all the detail, how it runs the church. Otherwise they all get bogged down in an elder meeting, they have to wait for people like me to be available. So most of the decisions are taken there for the running of the church. But the fatherly protection, guarding and direction is with the eldership team. But we meet far less often than we used to, because most of the day-to-day running is not done by us. We're just there protecting. Okay, that's one way of doing it. And with many of our elders' meetings, we actually meet with a wider team of men and women, simply because we want to make sure that we're not blinkered in the way we make decisions. Mm. We're still responsible. If you don't have women present when you're making important decisions, you can miss things. I know that's a total revelation to some of you elders, but you can. And therefore, it's good to have that. It doesn't alter the fact that as elders we're still fathers and we're still accountable to God for the church. You see what I mean? So that's how we do it at the moment. We haven't yet appointed some of those senior leadership team as deacons. We've got a bit slow on that. But, and they get involved in other things. So Hudson was telling me on the way up, we've just started a new series. Not just, I didn't know that. I wasn't there last Sunday. And I didn't realise we were starting a new series. But one of our gifted women preachers initiated that series in that senior leadership team. I'm very, very happy with that. I have full confidence in her in terms of those sort of things. But I also know that's a delegated responsibility and I'm accountable for it. Do you understand? And if anything involves there and something was said was wrong, I would chat about it afterwards. If it was absolute heresy, you'd have to intervene, but that doesn't happen. I can think of it. Because we're equipping the saints, so they're not heretics. The only time I had to correct a heretical thing publicly, instantly, was actually a prophecy and not a teaching. And I actually had to get up and say, that's unbiblical what was just said. But you... so it could work out like that. And I know, on a Sunday morning, I rarely say anything. If I'm there, we do make sure that there's always in our sights that there's an elder present in the Sunday meeting, if we possibly can. Wouldn't be legalistic. But we're not there. But when I'm there, I'm there as an elder, I know people feel safe, but I normally do nothing unless God gives me a prophetic word or something. And even then I hold back, so I want to encourage the saints. So if other people are bringing things, I don't need things. But I know my presence, and there's people who said this to me, makes people, both the preacher and the worship leaders, and I always make sure I go up to them after and tell them they did a good job when they did, and they usually do. 2 minutes. And I try and get to people who've made a contribution if I can. You can't always because too many people. I'm just saying, well done. And that means a lot to them. Yeah. I just think, well, why should what I say mean a lot? But it does. Okay? Because I'm a father in the midst.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? Some of that would come from your own ministry.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
How does that work out? How do you build that culture for someone of Hudson's generation who's not on the team, but the same?
He's not on the team. Hudson is an elder.
Yeah, he's an elder, but he's on the team, aren't he? Are there any elders that are not?
Yeah, this.
Have you got any elders that are not on the staff?
Oh, yeah. We have four.
And they're younger.
Including me. Younger. How old's Felix? 40s? With a younger elder. Yes, for them to be an elder, the church needs to have confidence in them. So if you're bringing someone for eldership, you give them a lot of visibility. They may not be a brilliant Bible teacher, or they may, but you make sure there are things where they are seen to be contributing so that the church gets confidence in them. as a church grows, that's harder. As you have multi-site, it's harder. You may have to just rely on the site. But certainly when Hudson was not on staff when he became an elder, okay, he was in a secular job, and we just made sure that he was visible to the church. And, you know, when we announced we were thinking of bringing him into eldership, there was an applause. It wasn't, you know, do you understand? So you, so yes, I admit I have a bit of an advantage because I'm grandpa as well, okay? But I'm just trying to use family language, and some of those younger than me wouldn't be that, but they still bring security. Yes, so you do bring security to who you are, because every year I say to Martin, do you still want me around as elder? And at the moment he said yes. But I would still be who I was. But then that's all good, isn't it? So yes, you would make sure you don't bring anyone into eldership unless you know the church has confidence in. And you work that through in the process of bringing someone into eldership. Okay? Would that be fair, Hudson? Another way of doing it is, I know one church who I work with quite a bit, they would be slightly more conservative than me on women preaching, but they get the general point. And so they have a group of women who they see as gifted and senior in the church, who the elders meet with, say every third elders meeting or something like that, you know, in order to get their input.
Okay.
Because actually who preaches in the end is an eldership decision, by the way. I'm not enforcing anything. It's a local eldership decision. I'm just trying to say some of the principles on which that should be made. I'm not going to ride roughshod over everyone's anyone's conscience. So they meet regularly. Towards every other meeting or every one in three, with a group of women who they respect, say, look, we want your input on this. Okay? And that particular church, which has a number of sites, when I visited them, we did a weekend together, I also met with the site team of each church, and that was men and women, if they wanted my advice on things. Do you see?
Yes.
And that's how we have site teams that are men and women as well as the senior leadership team as men and women. We have site teams of men and women. And that's how that works out. Yeah.
There's nothing said that I don't understand or I agree with. So all the while it's meant to be. But what I think there is an absence of language. So for example, if you've got a child that's got a mother and a father, have a special word for father and not a special word for mother, distinguishing that role from all the other women, I think the child will be at a disadvantage.
Sure.
Now, from what you've said, the only word available is that deacon, which we don't use, but we don't use it 100%. So, I think that what the problem is, or what the content is the absence of language.
I
think in the church, James
is speaking
to a poor dog,
like
you use
the word
pastor to mean full-time Christian work when they're clearly a teacher or a prophet.
You're absolutely right.
The problem is language.
I agree. Could you spare me a moment? Because I've got a whole thing on language at the end of this talk. Is that all right? Because I agree with you.
All right.
You don't have to apologise. Okay. So it often results in elders meeting less often on their own. elders meeting regularly with a wider team. Another church I know, who takes St. View elders are responsible, will call elders meetings when this one of the subjects that elders need to be at. And that would just be for elders, but most of our meetings are leadership team meetings. There's different ways. You work it out, because you know your church. Okay? But I think we've got to move away from all decisions, or most decisions coming from an elders meeting. And, you know, because sometimes we used to say, in the days when we were moving from one pastor to elders, we used to say, there's a lot of teaching around, pastors are like the cork in the bottle. And I thought for a while, yeah, but if you have elders, you've just got a thicker cork. Do you know what I mean? If you're not careful. If they do everything that the one pastor used to do. So we're here to equip the saints. That's pretty biblical. And yeah. So language. Yeah, we get screwed up on language, I quite agree. Why are you apologising? That's just English culture apologising under those circumstances. Okay, so our Ukrainian refugees in the church said, how are we getting on now in England? Oh, we've learned to say sorry. It's a mess again. So, language. Yes. I said, biblically, family language was the priority. Fathers, mothers. So even Paul, when writing in Romans 16, as I read, and greet Rufus and greet his mother, who's also been a mother to me, he's using family language. Recognizing people who are like mothers in the church is important. It doesn't mean they're not a particular group that you say, but you just refer to it. Oh, so she's been like a mother in our context. Do you know what I mean? You just say in passing. You don't have to. So you're using appropriate language. Greet older women as mothers, it says. So that must have meant something to them in the way they spoke to them in a culture that would understand family. Okay. Pastor. That's a difficult one. And even within our wider network of churches, people use it very different ways. Okay. So some use it for the team leader of the elders. Well, that's not very, very biblical, but that's how it's used. Or anyone of the elders who's full time. Okay. Well, no, all the elders are pastors. But there'll be pastors that aren't elders. Because they've got a pastoral gift. So you're using it in the Ephesians 4 sense of people who can equip. You have no problem in saying if men or women can be an evangelist, they can equip the church. But then pastor we only use for... No. If they're doing pastoral ministry and they're gifted for it, they're pastors. Whether they're elders or whether they're full-time or not. So, but we have lots of different places to communicate. That's the other problem. Because when you can explain something in the church, but then when you're communicating to the world outside, you have to use words that they understand. Unfortunately, but you do. You know, the only people that call me Reverend are the HM Revenue and Customs. Because to them, I have to fit into a category, so I fit into the Reverend Devonish category. Because it's the only thing the tax man understands. As to what I do. So we have to, and also a lot of churches will use the word senior pastor for the team leader or lead elder simply because the world understands it. So we have to use language for them as well. And then that becomes those on the staff of the church, you know, the guy who heads up our social action. Yeah, he needs to be representing the church. He has to, I don't know what term he does use, but he has to be there as representing the church.
Okay.
So we have to, so language is difficult.
Okay.
I took a guy with me to one of the bigger churches within the New Frontiers movement, and a younger guy came with me on a trip overseas, and they said to him, what's your oh, I'm a pastor in the church. Oh, so you're an elder there, are you? No. Because he was doing a pastor's work as a full-time member of staff, but he was under the authority of the eldership team.
Yeah.
So it's hard.
Yeah.
And yet, elders must all be pastors. I don't believe that. And when I'm interviewing us, I've been asked to apostolically lay hands on someone for eldership. I always meet them and their wife. Scylla and I meet them and their wife first. And I ask them what, because they may have a main other gift, but what pastor, who are you caring for? I always ask that question. Because the shepherd heart understands all, the shepherd heart underlies all Christian ministry. Okay, so language is a problem. I agree. I can't solve it for you. I'm just trying to explain how, in different contexts, you have to use appropriate language. Okay, I understand that. But there's other language we do need to abolish. Leaders and wives. Okay, let's drop that. Because what about leaders and husbands? Because some of our senior leaders within the church, husbands are not leaders. And that's fine. And so we have to watch that sort of language. It also doesn't help single people. Men or women. Well, I haven't got a wife, can I come? Or I'm a single woman leader. So it's unhelpful language. Okay? Or the brothers. Tell the brothers. Now, that's okay if you're talking about, but you know, you'd say, in English, you'd say the brothers and sisters, wouldn't you? Unless you're talking about your natural family and distinguish between your brothers and your sisters. Or you might say, if you're going out on a men's retreat, a few of the brothers got together, that's all right. But be careful with language that effectively puts people down. Elders and wives are just about permissible, except the only problem is, because I believe, but the trouble is there may be single elders, and that's still unhelpful. Do you know what I mean? It's just such a thing. Yes.
I may be misunderstanding, but I thought you referenced earlier that one of the qualifications for an elder was to be a husband and wife.
Yes.
Do you then mean that if they have more than one wife, they would be unqualified? Yeah.
If it had more than one wife, it's literally a one-woman man. Okay, that's what it says. It's a good question because I have actually had that question raised with me sometimes. Well, he's single. Yeah. So was Paul. So was Jesus. Hardly a disqualification. So yes, it's a one-woman man. Is the literal translation of that. In other words, they're not sexually immoral, basically. Okay. And you get other family type qualifications, actually. They're like, they can't take care of their family. How can they take care of the family of God? It's seeing that, whereas they can be chief executive of a corporation quite well. So, also how we function in social gatherings. You know, you're not there as the elder then, you're just there as one of the good friends. You know, and we don't think positionally. And it's probably not a problem in the UK, but in some countries I go to, the pastor's advice is asked for all sorts of things, even things that he might be totally incompetent in. But because he's the pastor and he's seen as, you know, important person, they get his advice on things he knows nothing about. Well, I've seen some disasters through that. So I've ministered in other cultures. So, I'm just going to end with a quote from Steph Liston's book on 1 Corinthians. He was commenting on 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and headship. What is headship? He says this, there's more. While there's an inherited firstness that the Father has, what does the Father do with that? He exalts the Son and wills that the Son has preeminence in all things. He puts the Son first. The Son, in turn, is looking to take all that's been given to him by the Father and, in a sense, bring it back to him. When the end comes, he hands over the kingdom. If men, being created first, have a prominence through their headship, what are they to do with that? If they're looking to the Father and the Son as a model, they will lift up and promote gifted and godly women. How will the women respond? They will shine responsively in a way that lifts up and promotes godly men. Both are in one sense doing the same thing, but there is a movement to it that matters because it reflects something of what we see between the Father and the Son. Just look at that. What do you reckon? So foreign from our hierarchical ideas. So foreign from our culture, so foreign from the way expectations of our culture, even the debate. Now, you know, the women have had to do a lot to get free on certain things, which I think is justice, you know, equal pay for equal jobs, of course. If they have the ability to lead a big corporation, they should lead a big corporation. You know? Even Prime Minister, the last example, didn't go too well. But the... So what I'm saying is, we need to really distinguish between, if you're in the home, you need fathers and mothers. Now we understand that in some homes that's not possible, and therefore we need to bring extra pastoral support and honouring into those circumstances. In the church, we need to have family relationships, fathering and mothering, brothering and sistering, and really encourage that amongst us. I've finished. That's not a... I meant to just conclude with Steph's remarks, but I just thought that's... a good way of expressing it. I hope that's been helpful. I've been faithful to scripture. I've tried to be as much as I've tried to be, even though those scriptures are difficult to understand. But I've also, because of where I came from, understand the pain that arises from all three of those scriptures, whether it's head coverings, being silent in the church, or this one, how that has been unhelpful, because that was my upbringing. And so I hope that we can look at all these scriptures in the light of what Stott said, the overall teaching of scripture and the historical context into which they're given, which we don't always fully know, but we need to try and work out. And we don't just work it out by secular history, we work it out as well by what the actual scriptures say. That's why I said it's quite obvious there were problems with some of the women in Ephesus in a way that wasn't the case in Corinth. So, there you are.